Scientists have announced the near-complete sequence of the rat genome. Now, the rat is the third mammalian genome to be sequenced. We've already got the human and the mouse, and the research is published in last week's issue of the journal Nature. Now, if you know anything about science, you know that rats are the workhorses of laboratory animals. You can hardly name a drug or a treatment that hasn't been first tried out on a lab rat. And that's because almost all human genes known to be associated with disease have counterparts in rats. So now, armed with this genetic information, the lab rat should even be a better model for human diseases. How will deciphering the rat genome help biomedical research? And what does it tell us about how mammals evolved? That's what we'll be talking about this hour. So if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Richard Gibbs is the lead author of that Nature paper. He's the director of the Human Genome Sequencing Center and a Wilfred Cain Professor of Molecular and Human Genetics at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. He joins us today from his office. Welcome to the program, Dr. Gibbs.
Thank you, Ara.
So this is something pretty heavy. The rat, why should we not just be happy with the mouse genome?
Oh, a rat is not just a big mouse. These are very different organisms, and they're found in very different places, both in the wild and in the laboratory. So they're a different species.
Mm-hmm. And so what's so special about the rat?
Well, it contributes greatly to these experiments in physiology and in drug toxicology that you've already mentioned, and the mouse just doesn't do that. And it seems particularly well suited for that for a couple of reasons. One, because of its size. You know, you can simply do things with rats you can't do with mice, and something to do with its physiology as well.
What can you do with rats that you can't do with mice?
Well, the rat has been great for looking at the heart and lungs as organ structures, and looking at variation, you know, aberrations of those organs, and at diseases where those organs are affected. We don't have the mice that have the same overall disease patterns as the rats, and we don't have as easy a time at actually examining the structures in the mice.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned before that this will help researchers develop a better rat model of human disease.
That's right.
What does this do? It gives you a parts list, a rat's parts list?
Right. We're kind of coming at the problem from both ends. So on the one hand, we have these rats that already have diseases, and this information is going to help us to find the genes that actually are causing those diseases. And in most cases, that's those kind of diseases where there are several genes contributing to the problem. And then the other direction we're coming from is that there are a number of human diseases which are caused by a single gene problem. And in those cases, we don't necessarily have animal models. So now what we can do is look in the computer for the rat equivalent of the human gene that's defective in the human. And then straight away then we have a way to entry into the rat as a model for that disease.
Mm-hmm. And how close are rats and humans?
Oh, you know, they... The rodents diverged about 80 million years ago,
mm-hmm.
So that's pretty far. And at the DNA sequence level, if you look, sort of line up the two sequences together right across most of the genome, they're only about 40-45% identical. So they're pretty different over most of the genome. But if you look at the actual genes, which are a small part of the genome, you know, maybe 2-3% of the genome, which is actually the real genes, they're very similar, maybe 90%. So they're pretty far apart evolutionarily, but the important stuff has been conserved so much that we can easily identify it.
Mm-hmm. So now that you have the three, if you have the human, the rat, and the mouse, you can sort of triangulate?
That's right. Yeah, so we already knew, of course, from the mouse and the human what the differences were, you know, right across that whole long lineage from you know, right across the mammalian tree there. The thing with having two differences is you can't really say which side of the family the differences occur on. So by having this third species, we're now able to say what is more occurring on the rodent side than what's occurring on the primate side. Mm-hmm. And that's a useful evolutionary piece of knowledge. It's a useful piece of knowledge to help decipher what's happened through the whole evolutionary process.
And why do you want to know that evolutionary process?
Well, you know, so I guess you can jump ahead to why we're doing any of this. And, of course, our big goal is to help human disease. You know, we really want to understand the mechanism of human diseases so that we can go about finding ways to help them and cure them. And so what's that got to do with evolution? Well, it turns out that some of the processes that lead to evolutionary change are common to the processes that lead to genome change in single species and then lead to disease. Mm-hmm. That's the link.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's see if we can go to the phones. Let's go to Massapequa, New York, and TJ. Hi, TJ.
Hi, I have a question. How do the mouse genes differ from the rat genes?
Well, they're a good question. They're really pretty similar. You know, we find more than 90% of them are, you know, pretty much look the same with a few small changes here and there. What we did find is that there's a small fraction of the rat genome that has been duplicated, that some families of genes have undergone expansion so that there are more of them in the rat than there are in the mouse, or subparts of those families have expanded and become different. So there's a small number of genes that are present in different number and have slightly different function. But by and large, actually, it's pretty hard to tell them apart through this kind of comparison.
All right, TJ?
Yeah. One more question. What about how is that in relation to humans? Why are the rats better than the mice?
Well, you mean better as an organism? You know, I think you just got to call them different. You know, I mean
better to study for for our diseases and things. You know, how are they better? Why are they better to study?
Well, it's mainly because we have this really good long history of studying of them in the laboratory, and we understand a lot about their physiology, and the rats do exhibit certain kinds of disease that the mice do not. So these diseases are mainly to do with hypertension and cardiac function, but the rats are just very well-known models for that. So, you know, it's not a good thing to just try and pit the two animals against each other, because there are certainly some advantages to studying the mice in some situations. So now we have both sequences. Of course, now we have the luxury of every time you want to study any particular thing, you can choose the organism that you really want to. Mm. You've got the full set of resources to do that.
TJ, you sound very interested in that.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. Anything surprising pop out when you studied, and you, now that you can compare all three genomes, human, mouse, and rat?
Well, we were surprised to find that the first we were able to say that the rodents in this evolutionary comparison, that the rodents were evolving more quickly. If you look at their genome changes, there are simply more of the genome changes have occurred on the rodent side of the family tree than on the primate side. And the rats, in fact, are a bit faster than the mice in most ways. So that was one surprise. And then the other surprises were to do with these expanded genes. You know, that it was an unexpected level of expansion of some of these in the rat.
And so what's missing? I mean, is this, as we said, was a sort of a partial sequencing, or almost all of it. What part is left?
Oh, yeah. So, there is a trend now in these big genome projects to go for what we call a draft sequence instead of a finished sequence. In the case of the human, and eventually for the mouse, there will be a kind of base perfect sequence so that all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed. But that last part of those projects, the last 10% of them, is very expensive. It can soak up half of the money. And so the trend now for the rat and every organism so far after it that's to follow is to produce a draft. And so that's how we end up in the situation of having 90% of the sequence. But not too much is missing. We believe that we've extracted almost all of the value out of the sequence from the draft quality that we have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us, and good luck on your next sequencing project.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Richard Gibbs is the lead author of the Nature paper. He's the director of the Human Genome Sequencing Center and the Wilfred Cain Professor of Molecular and Human Genetics at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston.